Agenda is it's regarding public comment. This provides an opportunity for the members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public within the Commission's jurisdiction and which are not already on this agenda this evening. Is there anyone in the public that wants to speak about something that's not on this agenda? Okay, can you put that on the record that no one came forward on that? Next order is agenda item number one, which is our consent agenda for the previous two meetings that we've had, the minutes. And we had a meeting November 16th, and we had a special meeting November 30th. And commissioners, did you guys have an opportunity to look at the minutes? Is there any questions, concerns that, regarding the minutes that we want to discuss now? No? So because of that, I'm going to go ahead and ask for a motion to approve. I need a second.
I make a motion to approve.
Okay. Could we get a roll call, please?
Chairman Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Bissett?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Thank you, Ellen. So now it comes to the public hearing regarding agenda item number two. So I'm going to go ahead and just hand that over to staff. And Mr. Terry, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Okay, so tonight we are looking at consideration of environmental assessment number 2017-8, vesting tentative subdivision map. Thank you, Ellen. Number 6196.
Oh, thank you.
And conditional use permit number 2017-7. These are all related to a proposed single-family residential development at the northeast corner of Reed Avenue and Aspen Avenue. So we have a presentation prepared that correlates with the staff report. We're going to go through here. As always, if you have any questions, commissioners, as I'm going through this item, please feel free to stop me and ask away. Okay, so for the existing conditions at this location, it consists of 31.02 acres. It's actually made up of three APNs in total. It's currently utilized as agricultural land. However, it is surrounded by what is referred to as urban and built-up land. This has been in the city's general plan, of course, for quite some time, designated as single-family residential in the 2030 general plan. The proposed use is consistent with the development and with the general plan land use designation. The project site is zoned currently R16 single-family residential, which also is consistent with the zoning designation. The proposed lots that the developer is proposing meet the lot and the area requirements for the existing zone district designation if they're going to be contained within a planned unit development. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. That's where that conditional use permit comes in that's associated with this project here. And like I said, that's the development includes CUP, and that's what entails the details of the planned unit development within the conditional use permit. So what we're looking at right here, I know that's small up there on the screen, and I believe, Ellen, do we have handouts of the presentation for them? Yeah, sorry, let's actually get those handed out real quick before we move on. I think the things we already talked about are pretty clear to see, but once we get into some of the graphics here, it can get a little more challenging to see. So right now we'll be on page 5. Okay, so for the conditional use permit, we're going to be looking at here is the establishment of a planned unit development. What the planned unit development allows is for some slight variations in the overall design, but items that will still allow for the overall development to remain with consistency for that zone district in which it lies, but allowing for some slight adjustments to be granted through a conditional use permit process. And some of those items have been requested by the developer here. So of course we sit in the R16 district. The general plan density range that's allowed there is from 4 to 8 dwelling units per acre. And if you look down where it says the standard on the development standards right there, I'm just reading on the left side here. These are the items that they're going to be either discussing and or requesting. It does state their dwelling units 159. It's actually 161 units. That is stated correctly in the staff report. But on this one specific chart right here, which was still a working iteration, that was inadvertently overlooked. But just part of the actual presentation and does not apply to what we're actually going to be working on tonight or voting on tonight, which is the 161. So the minimum lot area that they would be looking at here, they're requesting as 5,000 square feet, and they do have several of the lots that would go down to 5,000 square feet. Standard in the R16 zone is a minimum of 6,000 square feet. So that's going to be the number one item where we would be looking for some adjustment there. And then also looking into adjustments that have to do with the setback areas. So we'll bump into that a little bit more. So lot sizes between the 161 that they have, they range in between 5,000 on the small end up to 10,242 on the large end. The average lot size, when you take all 161 lots into account, is over 6,000 square feet, so 6,143 square feet. That's where that planned unit development item comes in, because the development as a whole is still going to meet the standard. It meets or exceeds that minimum of the 6,000 square foot lot. But because you have some of them that go below that, it does require the planned unit development, which is processed through that conditional use permit. Its overall density as well is at 5.2 units per acre. As I had previously stated, the general plan allows from 4 units to the acre all the way up to 8 units to the acre. So 5.2 units also sits right within the allowed spectrum as well, and in fact is even on the less dense side of that. They're looking for a 15-foot living area setback, which is 5 feet difference there, so 5 feet closer to the road, but they would still maintain the 20-foot setback for the garage area. So there's still good driveway, off-street parking. Many times when you move garages, of course, closer to the road, you lose a lot of that off-street parking. They wouldn't be looking for that in this type of design, just looking to push the living area a little bit closer to the road there. And as far as the second story setback, they're looking for that to move away from 10 feet to go to 5 feet as well. And an increase in the maximum lot coverage allowed going from 40% to 50%. The reason why the developer is looking for that is to make sure that they can maximize the amount of living space, but there's also a large amount of conservation that they're placing into it here. The less land that you have that needs to be irrigated, the more water that you're able to conserve. So a lot of conservation minded went into the design of what they're looking for with this planned unit development. The request that they have made is consistent, of course, with the general plan. It is also consistent with zoning. And the picture that you have there shows a graphic representation of what they're talking about. So you guys can see where some of those differences would be. You can see the living area comes out a little bit closer toward the street, still maintains the 20-foot setback for the garage area, and the homes themselves a bit closer together. Still 10 feet completely apart at your closest areas, which in collaboration with PD and Fire, they are in support of and feel is appropriate, provides for the appropriate amount of access and emergency coverage. So what we have right here is the actual map itself. Ellen has some pictures that are a little bit bigger here that are going to make it a little bit easier to read. And you'll also notice over in the notes section there is a small red line item through there. So there was some discussion that had gone back and forth with the developer about utilizing a dry well system as opposed to utilizing an on-site storm drainage basin. And the city engineer and Public Works felt very strongly that it needed to be an on-site storm drainage system in order to provide for consistency with not only our general plan and our zoning, but also the master plans and everything that we have laid out for the future there. So the red line that you'll see there on the notes on the right side, there was an inadvertent item left that states drainage basin / dry wells. And since we know that the dry wells are not intended to be utilized and were not a viable option, we've made sure that we put a red line through there. So not a substantial change, but simply wanted to make sure that it was on the record and that the Planning Commission knew that and was very clear. So while it is a total of 161 lot for the design, you'll also notice down in the southwest corner, there is 10 lots that will actually serve as the drainage basin. Now, that is on site. If that drainage basin, if and when it could be abandoned, at a master plan, a larger regional item is placed, anything of that nature, they can then tap into that. Then they would be able to fill in that basin if abandoned and accommodate 10 more residential lots right there. That would bring the number to 161. So we are asking the Planning Commission, as you consider that approval, to consider those 10 units that also could be created. So 151 is what you would see built up front. If that ponding basin, if and when it were to be abandoned, it could be backfilled. That would then bring that total to 161. So there's the ponding basin discussion. There's also a 7-foot decorative masonry block wall that would run along the entire northern edge of the project. As many of you know, there is an existing packing facility, an active packing facility just to the north of this project here. That has been there for quite some time. This has been general plan designated for single family residential for quite some time. So of course, what we want to make sure there is that there is good mitigation between the two uses, that they are not interrupting each other in any poor manners. And so the developer will be placing a 7-foot high decorative masonry block wall completely along the edge there. And there's also the recommendation that there are shade trees and the drought tolerant landscape encouraged for every single lot. And again, as we had stated, much of what they're looking to do here with the planned unit development has to do with conservation. So these are items that were really a no-brainer for the developer when they were recommended by staff. That's just an overall representation there. One more item I would like to point out. On the far east side of the project, on the very back of the property lines, for those that are on the very east, you can see that there is an easement that runs along right through there. There is a notation on this map that does state that easement will be relocated into the public right-of-way. So you wouldn't have an easement running all the way through all of those properties. But it is currently in place there right now, which is the reason why the developer made sure that it was indicated on the map, but the notation does state that it will be put into the public right-of-way and that easement abandoned. Okay, so looking at the actual tentative subdivision map, there are several items by law that the Planning Commission and staff need to analyze and to consider before a map can be brought forward for approval. So first, it's that the proposed tentative map is consistent with the general plan or the applicable specific plan as specified in Government Code Section 65451. We have discussed that. It is consistent with the general plan. There is not a specific plan that is found within this area, so general plan consistency is the only item there. That the designer improvement of the proposed subdivision is consistent with the... Whoa. Okay. That copies the same item, so let's go ahead and skip that right there. That the site of the proposed subdivision is physically suitable for the type of development. As previously stated, this has been general plan designated and zoned for single family residential for quite some time. So that of course also means that it was analyzed within the general plan EIR and the various impacts and applicability, whether or not it was suitable for that type of development have been previously analyzed, and staff believes that it is appropriate for this type of development. That the site of the proposed subdivision is physically suitable for the proposed density of the development, because this falls within the appropriate range of the general plan density between 4 and 8 dwelling units to the acre. We believe that it is appropriate. And that the design of the proposed subdivision is, or the improvements are not likely to cause substantial environmental damage or substantially an avoidable injure fish or wildlife or their habitat. And we do not believe that it will create issues beyond those items that are acceptable. That the design of the proposed subdivision or type of improvements are not likely to cause serious health problems. There is not any indication that we received through any of the environmental analysis that there would be any significant health problems that would come as a result of this development. That the design of the proposed subdivision or the type of improvements will not conflict with easements acquired by the public at large for access through or use of the property within the proposed subdivision. We talked a little bit about that one easement that's going to be relocated into the public right of way. Aside from that, there are no additional concerns that were addressed. The tentative map meets or performs any of the requirements or conditions imposed by the Subdivision Mapped Act of this title. We have found that to be consistent and that it does address those items. And pursuant to the relevant government code, that the design of the subdivision for which this tentative map applies to, will provide to the extent feasible for future passive or natural heating or cooling opportunities in the subdivision. We believe that the design efforts that are being taken by the developer do in fact make an effort to be as conscious as you can possibly be as you are developing any site. So what are the conditions of approval? Well, of course, the complete conditions of approval packet was found right within, attached to the staff report itself. We're going to highlight just a couple of them here. First and foremost, no driveway access onto Reed Avenue. That is a safety issue there. And no driveway access on any of the side yards or corner lots. Again, has to do with safety. The street improvements, you can take a look there at the actual sections and what the streets will look like between the various three section details that they would be looking into. First, they would construct the remaining cross section of West Aspen Avenue. If any of you drive on Aspen Avenue right now, it feels like half a road, and that's because it is, right? So the northern portion of it has not been built out. This will continue that, so that will complete West Aspen Avenue. It'll also construct the remaining cross section of North Church Avenue, which is not as tight as Aspen Avenue, but still same item on the east side of Aspen, or excuse me, North Church Avenue. Right now there is nothing finished out, and this will finish that. It also connects Hollywood Drive and Acacia Drive. Those are on the eastern side of the map, and it entails full construction, of course, of all the local residential streets that lie within the project. So for the environmental assessment, we prepared an Appendix G checklist for the CEQA guidelines in order to determine what type of analysis was appropriate. We determined that this was a subsequent project and that it was not fully within the scope of the certified program EIR associated with the general plan. And as the lead agency, we proposed to adopt a mitigated negative declaration. So notice of intent to adopt the finding of a negative declaration was filed appropriately on November 16th of this year. Any comments on that mitigated negative declaration would have been due by 5 p.m. on December 6th. We did not receive any comments. And the executed mitigation measures agreement with the developer was attached as Exhibit C. And I would just point out that the mitigation measures include measures specific to air quality and to transportation items. And I believe that both of them are fairly low impact, but still identified in the environmental analysis and therefore entered into. So for public noticing, of course, this is a public hearing. So public noticing was required at least 10 days prior to today's public hearing. Notice of public hearings were published in the Reedley Exponent on November 30th for this meeting. The notice of the public hearing was also sent to property owners on December 1st, 2017, property owners within a 350-foot radius. So with that, staff's recommendation through resolution number 2017-13 is that the Planning Commission take the following actions. First, to approve the environmental assessment number 2017-8, adopting a mitigated negative declaration, which is dated November 16th, 2017, included in your packet. To approve vesting tentative subdivision map number 6196, authorizing the subdivision of land pursuant to the Subdivision Map Act. I would just point out there that when a motion is made for that one, it would be appropriate for the motion maker to also make sure that they notate, including the red line amendment on the map that was handed out, just so that that's very clear and on the record. And that does not change anything substantially. It just adds that clarification. And then finally, to approve conditional use permit 2017-7, which authorizes the establishment of a planned unit development as part of vesting tentative subdivision map application number 6196. So I know that's a lot of information to take in. I hope I didn't share it too quickly. It's a project that we are excited to see. In all honesty, this is the first larger subdivision to come into Reedley in almost a decade. So we're getting an opportunity here to talk about something that we haven't been able to talk about for a little while now, and we're excited to present this to the Planning Commission for your questions and for your consideration. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have for either Alan or myself.
The easement, who did it serve?
It's actually a private... for the packing shed above it, but our understanding right now is that it's not even currently being used, and they do not know if they intend to utilize it in the future. However, it will be relocated so that it's off of the single family lots and into the public right of way should it need to be continually maintained or utilized.
When you say public thoroughfare, was that to a street?
Right, yep, in the middle of the street, in the middle of the public right of way, yep.
Are they using that, or I know they haven't been used, are they using that for ag transportation, tractors,
things I believe nature? It's water right
it's,
now.
It's sewer, it's a sewer.
Oh, sewer line, okay.
Yeah, so there's no vehicular access on it, it's just pipe under.
Yeah, it's underground.
Yeah, so you'd need the easement to make repairs and that sort of thing. So if you keep it on the sites, the backyards become unusable and pools and that sort of thing. So that's why it's proposed to be relocated underneath the proposed streets.
And one of the concerns I also have is there any turnouts for any of the school buses on any of these streets right in here surrounding this development?
There are no turnouts. There
are you talking about specific locations?
On the I'm talking about the perimeter of the project.
Within the bounds of the project or adjacent to the project?
Adjacent. Well, around the perimeter streets where normally a bus would drive in or pick up children?
Not that I'm aware of.
Right.
I don't think there are.
Yeah.
I didn't see any either.
Yeah.
And
go ahead. No, I was going to say, I'm not completely sure, but I know that the closest school is T.L. Reed, and they don't bus in individuals. Oh. It's a walking distance school. So I don't know if that's even going to be an issue.
What about the high school?
We don't bus in high school from that area.
From that area?
Yeah, because I live in that area and there's no bus.
No buses whatsoever?
Kids walk. Yeah. Now, if they go somewhere else, then that's a different story.
This will be TLE?
I don't know. So
I think so.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's...
Okay.
Yep, that's the feedback that we got from Kings Canyon.
What about Emmanuel?
I don't believe that Emmanuel buses.
They don't bus in Reedley.
Yeah.
They don't bus at all?
In Reedley.
It wouldn't be an issue here.
Okay.
But Great Western attendance area's got to be pretty close.
Okay. I have a question. There's that PG&E substation in that area. Is there any talk about relocating that, or did you guys have a chance to meet with the PG&E people?
Yeah, PG&E was all part of course, the outreach and the discussions that we had associated with this, and they do not have any intention on relocating that item, but they do not believe that it is going, that this development would infringe on any of their operations as proposed.
Okay.
Existing wells, will there be any existing wells, or do we have sufficient pressure and so on to take care of the needs of the subdivision?
Within the current master plan and the connections that we have there, we do have adequate service capability for this area.
So we don't see us having to dig another well in that area?
No, not due to this development. Is you know, if as growth of course continues, you know, you'll start to see something else there. But this this would not require anything of that nature at this time. We have sufficient service capacity.
And none of these streets are minimized in any way with regard to our ordinance and standards for streets.
They utilize the standard street. Yep.
And they'll have the lighting, street lighting, which is normally consistent with what we have now?
Correct. Yep. Accessed, same thing, of course, for fire hydrants and yep. Everything is to city standard.
Okay. Do we see a need for any street lights when accessing either, would it be Frankwood and Reed?
Well, Frankwood, it wouldn't go to Frankwood.
Aspen, into Reed Avenue. Mm-hmm. We don't feel that we need, it would be just like Parlier Avenue.
Yeah, it would be similar in its design.
Part
yes,
of
here.
So
correct.
No need for a light of any type or, okay.
Yep.
And I know the traffic department did a pretty good research of all that. Okay.
Yep, we have good engineering staff.
And Rob, just for the record, if you can just clarify, we had a lot of information, and if you can just put in layman terms why we have today. As a presentation, what are we voting on today, either denying or approving? What is our responsibility today, so then everyone will know that we're not here for aesthetics, right? We're not here for...
Correct.
We're not here for not lot sizes, but houses, you know, what the houses...
Yeah, so we wouldn't...
We're not here for that.
Right, wouldn't be looking at the approvals of, you know, what are your elevations look like, and what are your color, you know, what's your color palette, and all of those type of items. What the Planning Commission is looking at right now is for the tentative subdivision of this land, and to allow through the CUP process to establish a planned unit development that gives some flexibility within what those standards are, to have some smaller lot sizes, because overall it's going to balance out and still sit within those regulations that are specified within the zoning code and within the general plan. So those are the items that the Planning Commission would be looking at, and of course the environmental work associated with those two items. But you are considering the subdivision of this land, which would then allow them, the developer, to move forward with subdividing and building single family homes.
So this is the first process?
Correct.
Because then you guys will meet again for aesthetics and things of that nature. They'll bring it to you?
Yeah, at that, all of those items at that point become ministerial.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They could submit master plans, right, for the floor plans, and then they would submit building permits for each, whenever they're actually going to construct those floor plans and tell us where they are, which
block. And all of those items will, of course, go back through the Community Development Department, will be reviewed, but it becomes a ministerial item at that time. So the building official looks at them to make sure that they meet all of the requirements that they're supposed to meet, building codes and everything of that nature.
When you talk about the lot size, you said smaller, to allow for smaller than, mm-hmm, smaller than a certain threshold, or just small enough to send it into the smaller range overall?
Anything that would go below the 6,000 square foot, which is the minimum identified in the R16 district. Yeah, so anything that would go below that, if a developer were looking to do that, it would require a planned unit development to have those discussions.
Any more questions, concerns for staff, commissioners, before I open it up for public comment? No. All right, thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
So now this portion, we had the presentation from staff regarding the agenda item number 2. Now it's an opportunity for the public to make comment if you prefer and you wish. So we have a process. So anyone can come up to the podium. If you don't mind giving your name and where you live, if you don't want to give your address, that's okay. You can just at least give us your name. And you can have 3 minutes to talk. We have a little clock here, and that's just to keep things going so we won't be here all day, and just to keep it flowing properly. So if anyone, I'm going to go ahead and open it up for a public comment. So if anyone wants to address the commission, you can go ahead and do that now.
Good evening, members of the commission. My name is Troy Wright. I'm a principal with Pacific Land Development Group. We're the developers for the property. We're very excited to be here. Have a great project. I think it's going to be very successful in your town. It's been very great working with Rob and his staff and Ellen. And so we're just happy to be here, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Well, why'd you choose Reedley?
Well, it just seemed like it's a great little town. You know, it's and we just kind of felt there was a need for some housing here, and found a great piece of property, and that's why we're here.
Where's the your main company located? Where have other developments been, developed and planned from your company?
We have projects in Concord, Modesto, Oakdale. Our office is in Oakdale.
Okay.
We're in Houston. We have stuff going in Manteca here soon. We're down in Tulare. Clovis, so we're kind of all over.
Okay.
What's the closest development you've done in the last 5 years or closest to our area?
Probably Houston. Yeah, in Stanislaus County.
Any more questions? Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Mm-hmm. If we have any questions, we'll call you back up. Anyone else from the public want to make a comment? This is your opportunity. No? Okay. I'm going to go ahead and close that for the record, please. So now, for staff, you know, what do you guys prefer? Would you prefer if we do it, if we split it A, B, and C?
You can take everything all in one motion.
In one motion?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd rather do that. So we're going to go ahead and do a motion on this resolution on agenda item number 2. Commissioners, you have in front of you resolution number 2017-13. This is a resolution of the City of Reedley Planning Commission approving environmental assessment number EA 2017-8 and conditional use permit number 2017-7 and related vesting tentative subdivision map number 6196, authorizing the subdivision of land pursuant to the Subdivision Map Act. So I'm going to go ahead and do a motion to approve. So we're going to do a roll call, and do I have a second?
I second it.
Okay, so as roll call comes along, commissioners, you either agree or don't agree, go ahead and do your vote. Helen, please.
Chairman Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Bissett?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
All right, thank you. So agenda item number 2 has been completed at this moment. If anyone wants to stay for agenda item 3, or if you are here for agenda item number 3, you're more than welcome. And then we have agenda item number 4, which we're going to talk about text amendment. So that's going to be some exciting things there. So thank you for coming in. So now we're going to go ahead and move to agenda item number 3. And Ellen, you have this, the presentation? All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Taking a minute to look at this.
Well, if we need to take a recess for that, just
thank
let
you.
Me know.
Mm-hmm.
Good evening, Chairman, members of the Planning Commission. Ellen Moore, Associate Planner with the Community Development Department. Item before you tonight is tentative subdivision map number 6206, which is also known as the Almond Grove Project. The project is located on the northwestern corner of Olson Avenue and South Frankwood Avenue. It's approximately 9.98 gross acres in size. It's vacant land. It has been vacant since about 2009, according to Google aerial images. And it is considered infill development since it is surrounded on all sides by urban land, and in this case, primarily single-family homes. Which you can also see in our general plan, this property is designated as low-density residential, pursuant to our general plan. And the zoning is also R16, which is consistent. And the proposed lots meet the lot and area requirements for the existing zone district designation. So on the screen right now is subdivision map 6206. And I'm going to have Rob pass out the full 11x7 sheet so you can get a better. But as you can see on the map, this is the subdivision of land for one lot to 45 lots for the development of single-family homes, with the average lot size of 6,847 square feet. As you can see, it's fairly straightforward subdivision. It does include two new residential streets that are an extension of South Enns Avenue and South Birch Avenue as well. And then Serrier is the boundary to the west, and then it is along Frankwood Avenue. So a few items of note on the subdivision. In the northeastern corner, you can see that orange square. That is where a bus turnout is located for southbound bus. On the other side of Frankwood, we have a northbound bus turnout. So to be consistent for that, for future public transit, that's what that would be for. And also of note is there will be a CMU block wall along South Frankwood Avenue, as well as a 20-foot landscape buffer with a meandering sidewalk. So it will mirror what is across the street and also on South Frankwood Avenue. It should also be noted that there won't be any driveway access for the homes onto South Frankwood Avenue, because that's a safety concern, and that's called out in our general plan as well to avoid that. So the front yards on the easternmost lots will be on facing South Birch Avenue. This is an inverted map, just so you can see the subdivision a little bit, because when it's wide, it kind of doesn't stand out very well, but you can just kind of see the basic subdivision there. And then to the right is the cross section of South Frankwood Avenue, which shows that there will be a seven foot high block wall, which is on the western or left side of that image. So South Frankwood Avenue will be constructed fully. So we did just go over the findings that need to be made to determine subdivision map consistency. So I'll go through them fairly quickly. The proposed tentative map is consistent with the general plan. The proposed subdivision is physically suitable for the type of development based on the land use designation. And the proposed density for the development is 4.5 units to the acre. And the density range is 4 to 8 units per acre, so it's on the lower side. The proposed subdivision and improvements are not likely to cause significant impacts to fish, wildlife, or their habitat. The design and type of improvements are not likely to cause serious health problems. The lots are large enough, and the homes will be spaced out far enough to avoid health problems of that nature. The design of the proposed subdivision or type of improvements will not conflict with any easements. There are no easements on this property, so that makes that determination a little easier. The tentative map meets or performs any of the requirements or conditions imposed by the subdivision map or this title, which the conditions of approval are attached to the agenda. And the design of the subdivision, to the extent feasible, will provide future passive or natural heating or cooling opportunities in the subdivision. A few conditions of approval to note: that there will not be any driveway access or private driveway access onto the side yards along East Shoemake Avenue and West Olson Avenue. So if I could really quick go back to the map to show that visually. So the northernmost street, there won't be any driveway access onto these side yards that are on the northern section of the property for safety purposes, as well as the southern side yards right here along Olson Avenue. And then let me go forward. And of course, the street improvements for this property, there will be the construction of the remaining cross sections of Serrier Avenue, or South Serrier Avenue, West Shoemake Avenue, and West Olson Avenue. So those will be built to the full cross section. And so these streets were constructed under previous city standard, which is a 60-foot right of way. So what is currently constructed will be mirrored on the other side. And then the two local residential streets will be consistent with our current city standards, which provides a 50-foot right of way. So they are a little bit narrower, but that is our city standard. Moving on to the environmental assessment, number 2017-10. Staff prepared an Appendix G checklist based on from the CEQA guidelines. The project was determined to be a subsequent project that was not fully within the scope of the certified program EIR prepared for the Reedley 2030 general plan. So the City of Reedley, as the lead agency, proposes to adopt a negative declaration for this project. The NOI was published on November 16th, 2017, and no public comments were received by the due date of 5 p.m. on December 6th. And we still have not received anything to this date either. So public noticing, as Rob mentioned for the previous project, which is the same as this project, the public noticing, we were required to publish a notice in the Reedley Exponent and send a notice of the public hearing to property owners. So we did those things on November 30th and December 1st, respectively. So with that, staff's recommendation is through resolution number 2017-14, the Planning Commission approved the Environmental Assessment 2017-10, which is a negative declaration, and approved tentative subdivision map number 6206. That concludes staff's report. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Well, I've been waiting a long time for this to happen. I'm tired of seeing them.
that open area
there, sure. and all the winds and everything picking up all that dirt and dust, and so this is an awesome addition to our environment, so I'm very pleased to see that.
Good. Yes, we are excited to see it as well.
All right, commissioners, this is the time to go ahead and ask questions to staff. Ellen, thank you for the presentation. Do you guys have any questions, concerns? We want to talk about this. Who's the developer?
The developer is Yanez Construction.
Okay.
He's a local contractor.
Local contractor?
Mm-hmm. And he is here tonight if you have any questions for him as well.
You guys have any questions?
This one's pretty cut and dry.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Ellen. I'm going to go ahead and open up to agenda item number 3 to the public. So public comment is now open, same as previously stated. You have 3 minutes, if you don't mind saying your name and your address for the record. At least your name would be okay. Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
All right. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. My name is Sean Day with AW Engineering, 8724 North Bend Maddox Way in Visalia, here on behalf of the developer. We're pleased and very happy to have worked with staff on this one. It was very smooth sailing on this. And basically, if you have any engineering questions, please let me know. This is pretty much a cut and dry project that you guys have probably been waiting for a while. And as she said earlier, the developer is here if you have any questions of him also.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, commissioners. How are you?
Good.
My name is Bill Hassett. I live on 1259 South Anns Avenue. Just two houses north of the proposed project. I just have a couple of simple questions.
Sure.
There is a drainage issue at that intersection of Shoemake and Enns. It's been going on for the last 40 years that I'm aware of. Is there any proposal within this development to upgrade any of the storm drain systems in that area? Or are we just going to add 45 homes and more drainage?
Yeah, I can go ahead and answer that one.
Yeah.
Sure.
Required as part, of course, of the build-out of the streets there is to ensure that the drainage is engineered appropriately. So this will complete the storm drainage system throughout that area. I couldn't say directly that it may take care of all the issues that would be there, but my assumption would be that you likely have items flowing backward toward your neighborhood now?
It goes back. I'm the second house north. It'll go back in front of our house where I go to the third house and walk out to get to my vehicle on the street.
Yeah,
it floods. Wow. Okay. It floods out far enough that, you know, I'd be ankle deep in water. No big deal.
Yeah, when we do take a look at all the storm drainage systems for project-specific items like this, our engineering department takes into account the entire system and most definitely everything right around it to ensure that you're going to not impede or further complicate any problems that you may already have. So I believe that the design that you would end up seeing here is likely going to make a very positive difference for that challenge.
Okay, excellent. Also, looking at the layout of the existing lots and the development, if you follow Serrier, between Serrier and Enns, and I believe the new street there is Birch. Does that go into the alley between Enns and Frankwood?
It is offset just a bit, and the reason why they offset the streets there was to try to break up the long length of one continual street that you have for safety, right? To try to be a natural slowing mechanism. But there is enough offset there between the street and the alley that it shouldn't tempt people to simply drive through the street and then right back through the alley.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was engineered intentionally that way for that offset.
Okay, also, looking at the existing subdivisions that are there, they're showing nine single-family residences on each street here. So if we're following off Serrier, between Serrier and Enns and between Enns and Frankwood, if we followed that plan, that would be 36 lots. How do we get 45 lots into that area? You follow me?
So, do you mean if you were to kind of take the same amount of area and drop it further over to the west?
Correct.
Yeah, I do get what you mean there. And I believe that the largest difference that you're going to end up seeing there is likely from the amount of right-of-way that is found in each one of those areas, which when that was built out was at a former standard, and you had 60-foot right-of-ways in that area. So if you were to take several streets at 60 feet, you're gaining, 10 feet on each right of way.
Oh, okay.
The current standard brought that down a little bit. And similar to the offset of the streets here, when they brought the streets in a bit more, the number one issue there was, of course, safety. When you compact your streets just a bit more, it has a very natural slowing type of mechanism for people, which is very, very important on residential streets like this. And then, of course, in addition to that, it has some cost impacts for the city. It's a little less concrete, a little less maintenance, and those type of items. But that's, when you start looking at that, everything is just a little bit smaller now in its requirement than it used to be, which allows for you to, of course, fit in a bit more lots and to increase the density a bit more.
Thank you for consideration. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Hassa, you didn't bring any treats or anything?
Well, I've been working all day.
Watch the ass pockets.
Thank you.
Watch the ass pockets.
Pockets, yes.
Anyone else want to make a comment? No? Okay, just for the record, we're going to go ahead and close it. All right, so before we move on, actually, in making a decision on this, I forgot to do something for the previous resolution to add. So can I add for the record that the resolution 2017-13 includes the red line in the map that was provided today?
I think that's appropriate.
Okay, yeah, thank you. All right, before I forget. So commissioners, we have in front of you in this beautiful binder that was compiled for us, resolution number 2017-4. This is a resolution of the City of Reedley Planning Commission approving environmental assessment number EA2017-10 and related tentative subdivision map number 26206, authorizing the subdivision of land pursuant to Subdivision Map Act. So I'm going to go ahead and do a motion to approve. You get a second. All right, Ellen, can you do a roll call for votes?
Chairman Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcellas?
Yes.
Commissioner Bissett?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
All right, thank you. So again, if you guys want to stay for the next agenda item, it'll be you can stay as long as you want. This is exciting times, just so I can say this, because I've been here 5 years and we've never seen anything like this. So we're excited that we get to see some growth in our city.
Over 200 units. It's exciting. Yeah,
it is exciting. So thank you, guys. Have a good evening. All right. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. All right. We can just go ahead and go right through, because this is exciting right here. Agenda item number four.
I'll be taking that one.
You're taking that one too? Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much. You have the floor.
Thank you again, Chairman, members of the Planning Commission. Ellen Moore, Associate Planner with the Community Development Department. So this item before you this evening is a text amendment application number 2017-2 related to accessory dwelling units. This text amendment came about through state law changes, as it does quite a bit. And the purpose of this is to make the development of accessory dwelling units easier. And then when I... Oh, yeah, thank you. Sorry, I keep forgetting about those. The state has always kind of done this because accessory dwelling units, which has been formerly known as second units, granny flats, mother-in-law quarters, there's been a bunch of different names for them, but the recent technical term has been second units. So they have been in our code for at least 10 years. I think that was the last time that this section of the code was updated, but before that they have been around. But it has been the state's purpose to address housing availability and affordability, and one of the ways they believe this these things can be achieved and be better off for the state is to provide opportunities for accessory dwelling units. Because in the past, cities would require conditional approval, so someone would have to come to this commission and have the accessory dwelling unit be approved, but the state did write law that says that it has to be ministerial. You have to do a site plan review, but you can still charge impact fees and that sort of thing. So in every few years, but in this case, it's been 10 years since there's been a change to make the development of them a little bit easier. So one of the main things is that they're rebranding the second units by having them now be called accessory dwelling units, ADUs for short. So hopefully I need to, in my head, get around the fact that I can't say second unit anymore, so say ADU. So if you catch me doing that, let me know. So the good news with accessory dwelling units is that they do count towards our regional housing needs allocation, our RENA numbers, which is assigned to us during the housing element process, how many units that we should be building for people to accommodate growth in Reedley. So these would help account for that. So what the state law has changed is they've changed parking requirements, fire protection requirements, and unit placement of these accessory dwelling units. And I can go into some detail about that because it depends on what type of unit you're going to develop and where it is on the lot and all that good stuff. So I will go into that. But what I first want to go over really quickly is what an accessory dwelling unit is. It is the primary dwelling unit. It's a single family home on one lot. An accessory dwelling unit is usually a smaller, separate unit that's operated independently from the main house, and it is on a single family lot. Or it's on a lot with a single family home on it. So it could also be, you can also have a single family home in a multiple family zoned lot. So that's kind of the criteria, is that you have a single family home. So this is a way for there to be a smaller unit in a single family neighborhood, because usually if there's two units, it's a duplex or something like that. So ADUs, they have size restrictions to kind of make them more compatible in a single family neighborhood with single family zoning. So getting to the technical stuff, the text amendment application proposes to, as I said, rebrand and take out the word second unit where it's mentioned, and that is mentioned in Title 10, Chapter 2, Section 3, which is our zoning definitions, and also amending Title 10, Chapter 25, Section 3, which is the residential use matrix. So it's just replacing those terms, but still referencing Title 10, Chapter 6, Article D, which is where the regulations for second units are now. So we're proposing to repeal it and replace it in its entirety. So all accessory dwelling units have the certain standards, and I'm going to go over the more common ones that we would see. So there's only one ADU permitted on a lot. The ADU shall not be sold separately from the primary residence, but it can be rented. It may be rented. So some people may want to utilize this by having, you know, their parents or in-laws or something living in the accessory dwelling unit, but it's all family that's living there. So that's the option, and so that they can live independently of the family that's in the main house. But there are other people that want to provide a rental unit for others, so these can be rented out. As mentioned, they shall be independently accessible. But something interesting that was changed is that there a passageway is not required. So technically, you can, and by passageway I mean a direct pathway from the accessory unit to the street. So you can kind of have the accessory unit in your backyard enclosed by a gate. It doesn't have to have its own separate path to get there. So that's something that if a property owner were to develop one of these, they would have to, you know, choose to do that. But it'll be between them to figure out access and all that good stuff. But yeah, so it has to have an exterior door, has to have its own separate kitchen, living facilities, bathroom facilities, so completely separate from the primary unit. And something that is optional for cities is that the owner of the property shall reside in either the primary dwelling unit or the ADU located on the same property. So the property owner that's based on Fresno County records has to live in one of them. And so they do sign a covenant stating that they will do that. That's recorded on the property. So anybody buying the property knows that they would have to live in one of the units. So now I'm going to provide some visual pictures to see what sorts of options that people have when wanting to develop these. So the first one is an ADU within an existing dwelling. And what I mean by that is within the existing four walls of your house. So you're not adding on, you're not doing any new construction. It's essentially a conversion. So this is the most drastic change from the recent state law. So in this case, this is a property on Friesen Avenue, and the ADU that's kind of shaded in there, that is actually a garage, an existing garage, that's right off of the alley. And so this would be considered a garage conversion because the property owner came in and asked if they could add another unit on here. So in this case, a building permit would be required. But usually we would have a site plan review as well, so myself or Rob would approve a site plan. So that process does not have to be done in this case. So they still provide a site plan, but it doesn't. We can't do further approval than that because it's within the existing living area. So the other change is that we do not have to require parking for the ADU. But if it's a garage conversion, they're taking parking away from the existing unit, so they have to replace that elsewhere. So I think that white rectangle, I believe that's a carport. So they would they can just use that because you only need two parking spaces for a single family residence. But their backyard is pretty large, so they could figure out additional parking elsewhere. And the other major change is that fire sprinklers would not be required for conversions. So, and this was recent. It was recently changed in the building code that any new unit requires fire sprinklers. Was that the 2016 code? is the 2013 code. So the in the according to state law, if the primary unit does not require fire sprinklers, so if it was built prior to 2013, you do not have to add fire sprinklers to this new unit. Anything built, which is basically Frankwood and Lilac, and then a few other infill homes. So all of those newer homes have fire sprinklers. So if they wanted to add an ADU, they could, they would have to add fire sprinklers, but not for an existing home built prior to 2013. So that's one of the bigger changes for this. The other thing is we cannot charge development impact fees for a conversion. And the other thing is that we would not, they do not have to comply with setbacks, because technically this is a legal non-conforming garage, because it's that doesn't comply with the 5-foot side yard setback. But in the in this instance, it can stay there and be converted into a living unit. This is kind of the what I would kind of consider an ideal situation, and this is actually the neighborhood next to mine where I grew up, in Manteca, in Lard. So, yep. So this is a single family home, and this is kind of an ideal situation because, and I don't know if there's an ADU here to be honest with you, but this was kind of a good layout. So the orange shaded box on the right hand picture, that could be considered an ADU if they close that off, if it is part of the existing home, because you have driveway access, you're not taking away the garage, and there's independent access into the living unit. So this is kind of an example of something that may work well for the renter and the owner, but you don't have a backyard. So that's just kind of personal preference. And lot coverage, this is Manteca's lot coverage, which is probably more than ours. So that's the other thing you have to keep in mind. So if you decide to build an attached or a detached accessory dwelling unit, so basically new construction, there are more requirements, and it's a more similar to what the code is right now. So there are size restrictions for attached ADUs that cannot exceed 50% of the existing living area, up to 1,200 square feet. And that there's a yellow house behind it, that's kind of where the addition is indicated. And then on the right-hand side, this is an example of a detached ADU where the floor area cannot exceed 1,200 square feet. So there are size restrictions for this, for these types. So this is a house in Reedley. This is part of, I think this is in the Orchard Estates subdivision. And because it was kind of difficult to find one that could potentially work, but this was the closest thing I could find. So the orange shaded area, you could technically square off that house and it would be an addition, and that would be the ADU. So it would be new construction. So we would require site plan review and a building permit. We would charge development impact fees. We would require setbacks to be adhered to, which would work if they stick with the existing house. Lot coverage would be determined, so it couldn't be more than 40%. ADU parking would be required, so they could either park in the driveway, or if the owner was nice, they could put a parking spot next to the ADU. And according to our code, the ADU parking requirement is one space per bedroom. But fire sprinklers would not be required because this home was built about 10 years ago. So this is another example of a unit above a garage. This is the same neighborhood that I grew up next to. And this has an attached studio above the garage where the orange shaded area is. That's kind of where it was a studio sized apartment kind of thing, and there was a separate entrance to go up there, so that could also work, and if you're still adhering to setbacks, it would still be an addition, so you would follow those property development standards. And then the last category would be a detached accessory dwelling unit. And this is new construction, obviously, so a site plan review and a building permit would be required. We would charge development impact fees. Setbacks would be adhered to, as well as lot coverage. You would need ADU parking, but fire sprinklers would not be required for this one. So you could, this could kind of work to provide a pathway, even though you don't have to, on along the right hand side of the house. You could have, you can even extend your parking there up north if you wanted to, and then have a small gated area and still have a pretty good sized backyard. So that was kind of a summary of the text amendment. But a final note is, just because you can develop a ADU doesn't mean that you actually can, depending on the site that you have. There could be site restrictions like lot size. Your house could be right in the middle of your property, so you can't really configure an ADU while meeting all the setbacks and standards and everything. And this is kind of an example. Sometimes you'd have to choose between a pool and an ADU. And in during these summers, I would prefer a pool personally, but it depends. So you still have to adhere to development standards. There is a parking requirement, or you can waive it if there's a public transit stop within a certain distance. I think it's a half a mile, if I remember correctly. So Dial-A-Ride doesn't count, so we wouldn't really be able to use that.
Uber doesn't count either.
I don't think it would. Okay. That's a good point, though. Car sharing counts. Car sharing would count. So as you can, this ordinance is kind of tailored to the entire state, primarily Bay Area and LA, where this would be, and it would be important to have more ADUs for more housing opportunities. But we still put this in there just in case in the future, if we get some transit stops, that people can utilize this. But the majority of us still need cars to drive around. So parking is important, which is why we added the requirement for one space per bedroom for new development. And of course, we do have grounds to deny a accessory dwelling unit based on public health and safety. And that would, a primary example would be substandard conditions. So if there's a garage that's on the setback or it's substandard, we would not allow someone to convert it. So we do have that. We do have that opportunity to do that. It may be an uphill battle in some cases, but if we have evidence of substandard, then we can go through that. But the state law is pretty, the intent is clear that they want ADUs to be more, to be easier to develop. With that, staff's recommendation is to recommend to the City Council approval of Environmental Assessment 2017-13, which is a finding of no possibility of significant effect. And also, staff's recommendation is to recommend to the City Council approval of Text Amendment Application Number 2017-2. That concludes staff's report. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. Yes, sir.
I have two questions for you. One, on detached ADU, do you require separate metering for water and electricity?
For detached? Uh-huh. Yes, we would.
Mm-hmm. Water as well?
Correct,
all utilities. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if I was Ron's neighbor and he was going to bring his mother-in-law and his uncles and everybody into the neighborhood, and
I would check with you first.
He would create an ADU where could I as a neighbor protest that? Because I'm looking at occupancy. Is there any limitations on occupancy on ADUs to prevent this from happening?
Right. I would say I don't think there is for occupancy, because it's an additional unit and we don't have those types of, we don't have maximum occupancies for homes or for units.
So they can pile in 12 people?
If it was a rental situation, there is stipulations for overcrowding that fall under substandard housing conditions. Oftentimes when we go to houses, especially with a lot of different cultures and ethnic backgrounds, different families do different things, so you will find multiple generations in single family homes. As long as they're all related, we don't really enforce the overcrowding unless there is some egregious conditions existent in the property. But if it was a rental situation, overcrowding would be a concern if there was a complaint.
Okay, Pete.
Okay.
You're going to
bring up petitioning.
Thank you, Caitlin.
I'm petitioning right now.
But something that has been happening, I've read a few articles in LA, especially neighbors sue each other for trying to put these in, for doing ADUs, and it's blocking views or those sorts of things. So this state law kind of protects people that are building the ADUs, so it kind of lets them do that. You still get held up in a lawsuit, of course, but more likely to rule on that person's side if they were to develop one, but it depends.
So is this movement to go to the ADU, is this to in order to clean up some existing conditions, or is this a new arena, a new world here in California to permit something that heretofore hasn't existed?
I think that would probably be an indirect effect, is to provide, if someone were to convert a unit, they would have to adhere to building codes to convert it, not necessarily setbacks. So it would essentially clean things up. But these ADUs are pretty common in other parts of the state. I know in San Luis Obispo, where I went to college, they had quite a few, because the college students, it could be helpful for Reedley College if people were to provide housing, because it's only one or two people that you just live in a studio, and usually more developed neighborhoods are closer to amenities, so it's more attractive to people. So it may be a new avenue for us, because we get ADUs, we get quite a few inquiries, but since I've been here, I don't think there's been any. I think there was one that came in right before I got here, and that's been 4 or 5 years. But with this state law, we might be seeing more of them, because it makes it a little bit easier. It reduces the fees, because of development impact fees, sometimes you don't have to pay them. So we could see more of them, but again, it depends on the property that you're working with.
And just to clarify, the reason why staff is bringing this item to you is so that we can make the updates in our existing code section. I mean, we already allow for what's right now called the second units. This is to make sure that the new changes that the state law have introduced, that we are still, that our regulations are in line with what the state allows.
All right. Okay. Then maybe that answers. It's more of a bring it in line. Maybe cleanup isn't the word.
Yeah.
It brings it in line. But is it, in general, permitting more than what existed heretofore?
I think it removes some of the items that could have been impediments or seen as restrictions in the past, so it may make it easier to place the items. But with what Reedley had in place, they were already allowed, but this likely just makes it a little bit easier for someone who would be interested in doing it. I do not believe that you would see very many of these units placed now that would not have been able to be placed before, even though it may have been more expensive and taken a little more time.
So this will protect me against Pete's complaint?
That is correct. Okay. Yeah, as we'd mentioned at our last meeting, it's been a very active legislative session, and still ongoing, as it's a 2-year session. And that's the reason why we've seen a lot more of these text amendment discussions, as the state has made some changes, particularly in the housing areas, and a lot of definitions. They're combining a lot of items and rebranding and redefining, and so we then simply need to go back to our code and make sure that the items that we have in our code are not going to put the city in a position where they could be legally challenged on something, while still making sure that we're maintaining the maximum amount of control that we feel is appropriate for the community.
I can see that.
Yeah. Right.
Ellen, you used the term build or convert, and let me go to the attached versions. You had one of the first ones, you had a two-story. So if I've got an existing two-story, and I'm not going to do it over the garage. And do I need, if I wanted to have a family move in upstairs, is that an ADU? Or is that fall under a conversion or a...
Yeah, if you're, the term conversion is if you're using the existing walls of the house. So
what makes it okay?
But the conversion for an ADU, if you're wanting to rent out an area of your house as an ADU, you would have to add a kitchen and a bathroom and everything.
So you're adding something. You're adding accommodations to make it separate living.
On the interior.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So they would never have to use your party restroom or kitchen facility.
Mm-hmm. And provide for exterior access to that, to
okay,
that as well.
So you are changing the structure, or not structure, but you're changing some features.
Yep, you just wouldn't be adding anything to the exterior footprint if it's conversion, if it falls under conversion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so you could essentially, and I guess that a better word would be remodel that portion of the house, you know, because if, for example, this house, I've been in one of these houses, and there actually is a door between, there's stairs to go up to the unit, but there's also a door in one of the bedrooms that goes into the same unit. So if you were to rent it out, you could, if you want to, which you probably would, you would take that door out that provides the connection from the interior of the house. So there would be remodeling or conversion within the existing house that you would have to do. So that also goes into it, is the cost of doing that and how it would work and everything.
Ellen, can you go back a couple pictures to this one right here?
Yeah.
Chairman, do you have some comments you want to make on that?
No, I was just wondering if that's what Ron was talking about, the one in the back, the two-story, add.
Yeah, so that would be adding an attached, which
I
means they're going to share a common wall.
Keeping the same footprint, the same building, and you have a second story, and you want to, like you said, rent it out, or the mother-in-law comes in, is that fall under ADU? It would if you do certain things to it.
Correct.
Yeah, and if you provide certain amenities to it.
If you didn't do anything to it.
You'd have a roommate.
You just got a roommate.
That's right.
Yeah.
So if you rent it out, does that trigger it? Does that trigger it being under ADU? If you just rent it out?
It doesn't necessarily trigger it, but it's something that you can do to rent it out, but it wouldn't be, because you can rent out a room, you know, you could technically have roommates, but if you wanted a separate facility, a separate unit.
If you create something that's, that makes it separate, okay.
Not the original plan.
It's not the original plan, okay. That makes sense.
And there's a variety of ways. There's a variety of options that people have. If you look up, if you type in accessory dwelling units on Google, you'll see a bunch of examples. And I should have included one that where it kind of highlights you're just using the existing house. People convert the garage, so it's a garage with a door next to it. You know, there's a lot of different ideas that you can do.
If I build a 20-foot wall between my house and Pete's, are you going to charge me?
A 20-foot wall?
I will.
that's where that lawsuit on impacting his visual line of sight is going to come in. Yeah. Right. You're taking away my view.
Yeah, there's a lot of new developers that are doing those mother-in-law suite included already in the as an option.
Yes, that's true.
It's pretty.
Fresno, they're doing that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I'm like, I want to live in one of those.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah,
the kids live in the other one. I want to live in the small ones. Yeah,
they're nice. So
it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm, we just converted a two-story house into an ADU, and we were forced to put in a separate meter as well, mm-hmm. and so on, and a separate entrance and so on. So mm-hmm. I guess that could be considered splitting up the house, the upstairs and the downstairs. I guess that could be considered an ADU as well.
Well, mm-hmm. What triggered that then? That you had a separate what? What did you build or create or change that created just having a meter, a separate? No, you had to have the separate meter.
Right,
because
exactly.
Why?
Because we're renting both of them out.
Just simply because you were renting?
Rented out, yeah.
Oh,
so,
okay.
And this is in Indiana. So, mm-hmm. But almost there, we're running into the same ordinances and requirements.
Oh, yeah. This is very common in
land
use
common,
planning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you're saying that your house is a two-story house, you're renting the bottom and the top?
Uh-huh.
So that makes basically two units within the home.
Yes.
So that's why you had to do all that. Okay.
Right.
So you changed the
original. So they required that
right.
you put in a.
I think a fairly consistent trigger is typically kitchen facilities. Usually, when
yes.
you're going to get into your kitchen
okay.
facilities, that's
right.
where that discussion is going to go to. This is intended to be a separate living unit.
Right.
Yeah, and I would split that hair a little further to say it's just a stove.
Yeah,
because you
true.
Can you can have
you
a
have everything but
yeah you can have a playroom with a kitchenette, but it's a stove
it's
and
a stove.
Yeah, it's
okay.
a stove because that yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any more questions for Ellen? No. Thank you, Ellen.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Interesting.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and open this up to public comment. If anyone in the in the public want to make a comment on agenda item number 4, please do so. No? All right, just for the record, there is no public comment. I'm going to go ahead and close that. All right, so we're going to go ahead and make a motion on this resolution here. So we have commissioners in front of you, resolution number 2017-11. This is a resolution of the City of Reedley Planning Commission recommending to the City Council of the City of Reedley approved tax amendment application number 2017-2, ordinance number 2017-007, proposing to amend Title 10, Chapter 2, Section 3, pertaining to zoning definitions, repealing and replacing in its entirety Title 10, Chapter 6, Article D, pertaining to second units, and amending Title 10, Chapter 25, Section 3, pertaining to the residential use matrix. Do I have a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion.
Okay, can I get a second?
I second it.
All right.
You threw us off.
Sorry, I was like, I gotta give you guys a chance,
yeah.
right? I can't approve
you
everything.
You always make
yeah,
the
we,
motion.
Yeah,
no. I gotta go back to my old ways, I guess. It's the last meeting of the year.
Didn't want to be stuck in the mud, Randy.
Right.
You know.
Curveball.
Could I get a roll call, please?
Yeah, what just happened?
Commissioner Bissett?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcellas?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Chairman Custodio?
Yes. All right. Thank you so much. So now we go ahead and we're going to move on to the director's report, agenda item number 5. So, Rob, you have the floor again.
Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah.
For those of you that were able to attend just on last week, on December 7th, we actually had the official opening for Paseo 55. So it is completely up and operational now. All certificate of occupancies went live. Right before everything, yeah, it was tight, but they were working hard and got everything open on time, and it's good. Obviously, we continue to be engaged with them, and we're excited to see that project there and hope it does good things for the downtown area, of course.
And that's for everyone, right? That's anyone that wants to rent?
Yes. Yep.
Say that again.
As far as who can rent?
Right.
It is a Fresno Housing Authority, so
okay.
you go through the application process
with
them.
Them.
So it's
okay.
yeah, it's not a standard market rate.
But it's not an exclusive private like you know elderly here. You know it's basically a rental
correct
location basically
yes.
for
yep.
units.
They
okay.
do have some units that are intended, of course, to accommodate the senior crowd, and that's the
okay.
target. Audience that they're looking for
okay,
there.
That's what I wanted.
And my understanding is right now that they have seniors in that. I mean, they have applicants that fall within that category. So,
are we looking to now that it's in the scenario it is to market it toward college students?
No, I don't think so. I think that it's really more about the application process and then being able to be able to find.
There was a reason I asked that, because we had an employee who illegally lived upstairs above someone because he got thrown out of the dorm. I mean, it's a long story, but at any rate, he wasn't from this area. When he came into it, there was a problem, and I went, "Oh, you cannot do that."
Yeah.
Oh, Don does not need to know this. But it was before we had any thought of doing some of the things we're doing currently. It was,
sure.
It was when we were just still doing nothing.
Yeah.
We just couldn't, you know.
Yeah. My recommendation would be for him to apply. Sorry. I don't know exactly what that would look like, of course, through the Housing Authority, but that would be my recommendation.
All right.
And then also I wanted to follow up. Commissioner Hudson had a great question at the end of our workshop last time. You had asked if a planning commission ever goes into closed session. Mm-hmm. And I had never personally been associated with that before, so I thought, you know, I don't see why not. Any commission or council, given the appropriate timing and content, can have that. So I followed up with legal counsel, and that they confirmed that is the answer. Yes, if a planning commission were involved and had jurisdiction over something that is going to entail like a potential lawsuit or something of that nature, that they could enter into a closed session and discuss those items if they felt they needed to. Although he did point out that it is extremely rare, and you'll typically only see it in fairly large jurisdictions.
Yeah, I thought about that later, and normally you go into closed session for personnel issues or contract issues, but a legal issue, you go in. So, you know, it could happen.
It is possible. Yeah, absolutely. One thing I thought was really interesting was that the kind of the caveat to that item was, he said, in particular for an agency the size of the city of Reedley, he said many times you'll see a confidential memo as opposed to a closed session item. And he said that's typically much more effective for an agency of this size, but still provides for the same type of protections, and you need to, of course, have the same standards that would be held for a closed session of that nature. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting. So while we will likely never have to address anything in that manner, I think it's at least good information to know that if something ever did happen and we felt that was appropriate, noticed properly, and everything, of course, in line with Brown Act, then that could happen. So
if we,
but fingers crossed, we don't have to ever.
Well,
do
if
that.
We ever faced a contract, a potential legal question, then we could ask the chair to check on that or consider that.
They could, but keep in mind, it would have to be something that would be tied to a project where the planning commission is making the decision on that.
The decision.
Yeah, so if it were a recommendation going to the city council, you wouldn't have a closed session because the ultimate decision-making power is with the council.
Okay.
So, but in that instance, you might see something like a confidential memo that would help the planning commissioners be able to understand if there has been a threat of litigation or something of that nature, because that is very vital information that the commission would need to understand as they are considering any item.
Okay.
So staff's goal, of course, in everything that we do is to always be transparent in the very appropriate ways, and anytime there is an item such as that, we would always be very mindful of the Brown Act, what it states, that the appropriate manner for us to address something and to not address something. So everything would be in line with that. But I thought that was a great question. Thank you very much.
Thank you for checking.
So that I think that wraps that up. Unless, of course, there's any questions that you guys may have about any of the ongoing items. A lot of the items that we discussed tonight are things that we've been working on for the last few months and had told you we were going to come up on. So my report's not as long tonight simply because I think the meeting covered a lot of the things we've been working on.
Yeah, pretty substantial.
Right. I just want to know if Ron still has a job.
I hope so.
Let me check tomorrow, Pete.
No, I mean with this entity here.
Oh, with the Planning Commission?
Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry. I should have notated that as well. So at the last council meeting, the council unanimously voted in support of the applications that had come in, which from the three of you, all incumbents, So obviously, thank you very much for your continued service. And,
awesome.
And I
didn't know that.
I'm very sorry. I don't know how that skipped my mind. I think I was so concentrated on the
other. Because you already knew. I mean, you're like, yeah, that'd be better.
They did go into closed section when
That's why I didn't know.
Well, you should have seen his.
I was hoping for another retirement party.
His resume was 16 pages long. I thought he was applying for CEO of GE.
When you're that good, right?
That's awesome. So we're going to have the same commission?
That is correct.
For the next at least 4 years?
Yep, I hope so. I hope we all get to see you sitting right here. You guys have been incredible to work with and very grateful for you.
And you guys will be here for the next 4 years, right?
Unless somebody...
No, did you see that face? He's all like, well, Frezzo's calling him.
I was going to say, unless I get fired. But then I was going to tell you, I walked into Ellen's office the other day, and there was a job announcement for the community development director position in Chowchilla, right? And I about started crying, and so I had to say to her, do I need to be worried about that there? And of course she said no. I kept it
as a joke.
No, that's good.
That's where I started.
She's going to hold those kind of things over our head.
Yeah. While I told her I totally expect for her to be in that position when she chooses that in her career.
When you leave.
My hope would be that we're going to be here together for a good amount of time.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
For future agenda items, we have noted here that a couple of our meetings have been canceled, the 21st and the 4th of January, and then the 18th.
I would make a notation there that we likely will have a meeting on January 18th.
Okay.
It does look like we're going to have some content to discuss on that day.
Okay.
And I think just to clarify, in the past, I think I had mentioned January 11th, we could have a meeting, but we won't. Because we don't have anything ready at that time.
So. Okay. And so the 18th could also be the swearing in for the incumbents?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. That's when that'll take place. All right. Assignment of chair and all that fun stuff will take.
Yeah.
Go ahead and push it off now, right?
So, you know, 18th is of January. It looks pretty good for us to be here. So, all right. We don't have any more questions, concerns. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn this meeting.
Thank you.